spotted 30 more seconds than anyone else get up here. So. Yay! It says culture. Guess what we're going to talk about today? Culture. I've read a couple books on culture recently, and it's really astounding. It surprises me what is going on in our society and culture in general. And I want to talk some about the culture and how it relates really to our Christianity. Brandon O'Brien co-authored a book called Misreading the Scripture Through Western Eyes. I would recommend it to anybody. It's some of it's kind of condemning, I mean, on a heart level, but it's so interesting. I'm going to give you a little peek here. He was a missionary in Indonesia, I think, for maybe 20-some years. He and his wife and raised a family there, and he and the co-author, which I will quote later, spent a lot of times with people who are far different than we are. Let me read this little story, okay? While we were missionaries in a remote place in Indonesia, the only people our children knew who spoke English was my wife and I. On rare occasions, another missionary would visit us. When our elder son was 5 years old, an older, very proper, hair-in-the-bun missionary came to visit us. We introduced our son, who very politely said, "Very nice to meet you." The missionary asked him, "Where are you going?" And our little angel smiled up at her and said, "None of your damn business." Brandon says our chins hit the floor. We had never heard him say that word before or since. The completely shocked look on our faces told this five-year-old that what he said was unacceptable. His mom sputtered, "Josh!" Before we could say another word, he started crying and ran from the room. We communicated effectively this word was not appropriate. When he left, we were in an awkward spot with our missionary leader we had just met. We didn't even have the luxury of shaking our heads and saying, the things they learned from their friends. All of his friends spoke Mandarin. I'm sure the missionary was convinced that the richest household used spicy language at home. He finishes this story by saying, "We spent weeks wondering how our son could have learned a word that he didn't hear us use. Later, when we were re-watching a movie, there was no English television, but we did have videos, and we heard the now famous line, 'Where are you going?' To which the hero replied the now infamous line. Our son had used it exactly like he heard it. Our son had picked up a turn of a phrase by watching a movie, which is one way culture is transmitted. It is impossible to escape culture. It tends to kind of stick to you like glue and slowly reforms us into its image." Don't think so? Let me give you a couple of illustrations. Do you think you've been affected by your culture at all? Do you remember, however old you are, that what people wore 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 60 years ago? I know, you don't remember back that far. It was very different than what we wear today. And the one thing is, you got to remember, everybody who wears a style at a certain time thinks they're very avant-garde, you know, leading-edge stuff. And you look 20 and 30 years ago, at 20, 30 years past, some pictures, and you go, "I can't believe I wore this." Well, let me begin with this one. We remember the roaring 20s, a well-dressed lady, okay, out to have a great night. Okay, so fast forward from the 20s up to, say, the 50s. Now, that very well could have been a picture of the family I grew up in, dad, mom, and two sisters, okay? They must have gone to a little carnival or something. They were just kind of semi-formal, dressed nice to go to a reception for a wedding. Doesn't look like we dress today. How about this? The 70s. Big fins on cars, you know, bell-bottom trousers. Now, I did save you the pain of having to look at my picture taken in the 1970s of myself in my lime green leisure suit. I want you to know I look good, okay? Let's move to one more. More current. Oh, it's not just for the ladies now. I wondered as I prepared this message, if an anthropologist finds what remains of this culture 1,000 years from now and comes across all these, they will draw the conclusion that the poor people had nothing and they lived with holes in their pants. But that's culture. It changes, and we have to delineate between what is a style and what culture affects that counts. Amy Hall, at Stand to Reason, wrote the following. She says, it struck me when I read that how easily popular culture can shape our view of reality without our even realizing it. The truth is, whenever we watch TV, play a video game, read a book, we immerse ourselves in a world that is not real. It is a creation of a particular human being, and it reflects their beliefs about reality, not necessarily reality itself. This is a good reminder to constantly be thinking about the stories we're taking in. Amy says both their overt message and the subtle assumptions that we gain. To compare their worldviews to see what we know to be true and to remind ourselves that what we're seeing is the result of someone's imagination, not reality. When I came home on the plane ride coming back from Papua in 2010, I never mentioned that Ruth and Eleanor were sitting in the first class and I was row 57. But I don't have bad feelings about it, just so you know, okay? And I think the plane was a 757, and we were flying from Taiwan nonstop to SeaTac in Seattle. And, yeah, I had a lot of books to read and all that, and I was reading on a book, and I noticed, wow, each seat on this plane had a little TV screen. I thought, wow, how much fun. And so they had a little menu that showed the six films they were showing. And one of them so happened to be a film that my daughter, I just had a conversation, my daughter had just seen the week before I left. And the film is called Avatar. Mm-hmm. And so I watched it through once. And since I think I finished in time, I was somewhere mid-Pacific, I guess, I played it a second time and watched it. And I had an interesting experience when I, you know, came up the jetway and got out into the waiting area. I didn't know what was, for a minute, I didn't know what was really reality. Was there going to be some really tall blue people show up? You know, it's just so, sometimes you have you ever felt like you don't know with this is real or not real? And that's what the movie did to me. The question is, what's reality and what's imagination? And I think that is the problem we face if we get too immersed in culture. Today we're told to believe not what's true or provable, what we want to believe is true. This is a far cry from all of history of mankind. We always believed at least in some solid facts, and now we're being almost said asked, but no, we're being told to believe things that are not. Okay, we're going to play a little game. I'm about to show you a 30-second video. And I want you, at the end, when I stop, to tell me What game reminds you of that you saw many years ago when at the very beginning we had video games to play? Sherry, if you can do it with your cursor, right down below when you put your cursor, there's a... There it is. Yeah, yeah. Hit that. Thank you. Now, as you played your Atari or Commodore 64, what was the name of the game? Pac-Man. Isn't that what Pac-Man did? He went around eating stuff? But I do want you to notice one thing that is important for us to think about this. That was a bacteria being eaten by a white blood cell. And I don't know if the movie was speed it up or slow down so we could watch it. But what gets enveloped like a bacteria, and before we know it, we're gone? We don't get killed. We just get enveloped. And slowly, 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 we lose our consciousness of what reality is. I want to talk about Daniel for a minute because let's take a look at how people in Bible times face different cultures. And if you read much about people in Bible times, we think we have a lot of culture to handle. My goodness sakes. If you met a people that were 30 miles down the road, they not only didn't have their culture, you didn't even have the same language. And culture is very difficult to adjust to today, but it was even more difficult in some ways back then. Oh, sorry. I really like those jeans, by the way. This is from the book of Daniel. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief officials for permission not to defile himself that way. Again, this is when Daniel and his friends were brought into the king's court, and they were going to be groomed as people who served the king. Now, God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel. But the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men? The king then would have my head because of you." No vain threat. Okay. Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please, here's the deal. Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and the wine they were to drink, and gave them vegetables instead. I want you to note what he didn't do, and what we see so much of today. He didn't complain. He didn't lash out at those worldly people. Never once did he say, "That's not fair." Daniel, along with his friends, had to study for 3 years the pantheon of Babylonian gods, what we consider heathen gods. And he finished the top of his class. No, he felt no need to tell those heathens which way is up, okay? And he served God humbly his whole life. He obviously thought before he spoke, and he was gracious. If you read, he lived through the reigns of four different kings. Humility, well, he obviously thought before he spoke, and he was gracious. He was gracious to everybody. Humility has been expunged from our present culture. I think maybe it didn't start with it, but I go back to the 60s and think there was a man who was very famous and very brash in our culture back in the 60s. And his famous four-word line that I know him by is, "I am the greatest." Anybody remember Muhammad Ali? Now, the sad thing with that, he was the greatest, you know. But that began this kind of thing of, I'm important and I know more than you and I'm not going to listen to anybody. In humility, we need to be aware that we don't get caught up by the culture. We need to model Jesus to our culture. I go online, obviously, and use a computer. I don't have a Twitter account, you know, all this other stuff. But even on the Facebook page that I'm on to see what all the people that I know in different parts of the country are doing, I am astounded by the brashness of people. I hate those people. If you're a fill in the blank, you're an idiot, you're, and on and on and on. I think, whatever happens, civility. It's like we lost touch with it. But I have some hope. Now I think graciousness and humility is so rare that it may just start to make a comeback. You know, when you look at commodities, they're traded. When there's a whole lot of it, it's not worth anything. But when there's very little of it, it's rare and very precious. And that's where we stand. And I think this morning that the crux of my message is that I think we can change things. It's interesting. Daniel served a foreign cult without being changed by it. Never changed in his whole lifetime, you read in the Bible. He had a firm focus on what was reality, what he should do and what he shouldn't do, and he followed that. I think we need to get a perspective of our own world. Make what we say not just palatable to other people, but gracious, so people want to listen to us and not switch the channel. Because we have the ability with our technology to switch off anything we don't like. And we tend to concentrate on what we do like. Again, but you don't know what I'm going through. Back in 1973, I met a lady who was working at the store that I was training in at that time. Her name was Lori Dubonsky. Man, she was a lady. Great sense of humor, always smiling, warm. She was an Orthodox Jewish lady. She used to say, "Well, I'm Orthodox, David, but," and very softly she'd say, "but I love my bacon." Okay? And I just loved her. But one night we were upstairs towards the end of when we closed the store at 9 o'clock, and she had short sleeves, and I noticed she had six numbers tattooed on her arm. You know, and I was really dying to find out, so I said, "Lori, what's with the numbers?" She was in the host of the German government. She was a guest of Bergen-Belsen concentration camp for 4 years, 1940 to 1944. Every one of her relatives were killed there. Brothers, sisters, moms, dad, aunts, uncles, everyone but her. And she lived through that, and she said she only lived because she was useful to the German government at that time. Her job at 7 years old, okay, 7 years old, was to clean out the helmets and the boots of German soldiers that had been killed. She was repurposing them so they could be used again. And I'm not going to take the time to tell you what that involves. You can imagine. 7 to 11 years old. Now that is being persecuted, not just being picked on. And I think she was so amazing to me. I never remember her being critical to another person. I never remember her saying, it's not fair, why did it happen to me? She was just an amazing person. And I think that is perhaps what God would like all of us to be. Consider, if you would, Joseph, okay? We knew he was a great dream interpreter. His brother sold him into slavery. Not of his own making. What was the famous line he spoke when he finally confronted the brothers who sold him into slavery? You intended it for evil, but God intended it for good. Exactly. Let's go to present-day culture. How it affects us. You know, centuries ago, people were focused on simply having enough food and shelter and warmth, and they spent all their days doing those things, preparing themselves just for a simple thing of staying alive. They didn't have a lot of extra time to think about personal wealth, what they could acquire, I mean, unless you're a king or a royal person. But it was very different back in those days. Now, we today have progressed far beyond basic needs. Today, in our Western culture, without any need of any of the basics, we have time to think about us pleasing ourselves. Okay? Let me read out of Acts 11, 4 through 10, the famous passage where the sheet is let down and Peter's, okay? Verse 4, starting from the beginning, Peter told them the whole story. I was in the city of Joppa praying, and in a trance I saw a vision. I saw something like a large sheet being let down from heaven by its four corners, and it came down to where I was. I looked into it and saw four-footed animals of the earth, wild beasts, reptiles, and birds. Then I heard a voice telling me, get up, Peter, kill and eat. And I replied, surely not, Lord. Nothing impure or unclean has ever entered my mouth. The voice spoke from heaven a second time. Do not call anything impure that God has made clean. This happened three times, and then it was all pulled up to heaven again. What in the world was Peter having such a conniption fit for about this stuff coming down in the sheet? What in the world was he thinking? You know, our job is, when we study the Bible as readers, is to get into the author's mind regarding what was going on in the passage. And culture is almost always in a passage. And if we don't have the ability to understand some of the background in culture, we will miss much of what's being said. That co-author of the book that I referred to at the beginning has an interesting view on this. And that's why it's called Reading the Scriptures Through Western Eyes. Let me read what he says. It's tempting to read Peter's response as self-righteousness. I've never eaten anything impure or unclean. But perhaps Peter's reaction to the vision was not righteous indignation. Maybe it's nausea. No doubt Peter would have been disgusted by the very idea of eating the animals presented in the sheet. Restrictions against eating pork and shellfish are legalities to us, but for first century Jews, they were deeply entrenched mores. The Lord's command might even evoke similar feelings in Westerners if a sheet were full of puppies or bats or cockroaches. Something to think about. Culture is indeed interesting depending on which foot the shoe is on. Culture is maybe more important than we think. Romans 1 and 2, I'll bet all the kids who went through Awana memorize this. Let me read it. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This your true and proper worship. Here's the verse I want to concentrate on, too. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. then you will be able to test and improve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. Moses understood it. Daniel understood it. Every saint we read in the Bible understood that there's a culture out there, whether it's 3,000 years ago or whether it's the culture we're in, is always pressing in, trying to change it, us to its way of thinking. And we need to have an awareness that that goes on all the time. And again, Jesus lived in the culture as real and diverse as ours is. The original author who wrote the first little piece with their son who said hi to the missionary lady in the house. Here's what he said. I, Randy, invited an Indonesian professor, Bert, to come to Arkansas for a semester. Now, Randy was a seminary professor, okay? While Bert was there, I gave him my car to use. When Bert left, he didn't thank me for loaning him his car for 6 months. Bert was not ungrateful. He's a wonderful Christian gentleman. It simply didn't occur to him. He knew I was a Christian. My family had 2 cars. Bert had none. In his thinking, what kind of Christian wouldn't share with a fellow Christian in need? I wonder how we'd view that today. Paul considered such a thing to be required in Romans 12:13. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Do you get a little glimpse of how we get turned in our social vision, in the lives we lead, from what God's perspective is on things? I think some cultures have a clearer view of some of the important principles than maybe we do. So what do we do in 2019 not to just guard against being absorbed by a culture, but affect the culture? I got a thought. We'll guard ourselves by withdrawing from this world and those people. Somebody had the idea before. There's no escape. There's no escaping culture. We have to figure out how we're going to deal with it. I was just looking on the internet, and it gave a thumbnail sketch of what we call the monastic period, you know, where the monasteries were built and the holy men who prayed went and locked themselves up for 300 and 400 years at a time. It started kind of in 300 AD, but it says it was an attempt for individuals to live lives devoted to God. Only problem was they did, but they were left behind the culture and became non-relative to a whole world moving past them. And I think we have to be so aware. I mean, the culture today is moving at hyperspeed. What used to take 20 and 30 years takes 4 or 6 months. And I want to recall that video, okay, of the white blood cell and the bacteria. One doesn't eat the other. It just absorbs it till it slowly disappears. And I truly believe that's what we face. Are we Christians slowly disappearing because we are simply getting absorbed by the culture? And I think there's, whether we want to admit it or not, there's not one of us who hasn't been affected by the culture. If you wear a certain kind of clothes, I don't think it makes any difference. But there are things, especially today, that are being proliferated throughout our culture that says you can do things that you're not supposed to do. Okay? Oh, let me find a sheet here. Matt, this is about you. He's guilty. He did bar graphs and pie charts of all the questions in the questionnaire. It was marvelous, marvelous. I can't hold this up for you to see, but this one was, remember where we were asked questions, and one of the categories was sharing Christ, and you could respond with strong, somewhat weak, you know, okay? Sharing Christ. I am working on relationship with unbelievers. Response? Somewhat weak. I have regular conversations with people who don't believe in Jesus, somewhat weak. I have friends who are not believers, somewhat weak. I'm not beating up on us. I'm saying we need to recognize what's going on. If we can't identify what a problem is, we can't do anything about the problem. And I think that's the trifecta right there. We just aren't comfortable, and we just don't understand. And we have to, some way or another, throw aside our discomfort and learn how to do this. Anyone who has, this is an offer to you, anyone who has some encouragement with the data to back it up, that this is not the norm, please share it with me. I would love to be encouraged and thought, oh, I got on the wrong track. Everything's just super good, and we're doing good, and you're good, I'm good, everybody's good. We're not doing good. And if you read any of the books, any of the articles, any of the things that people have been publishing for 10 years about Christianity in the U.S., scares the socks off of me, man. We're not going the right direction. Now, please stick with me, because I'm not attacking any generation, okay? We're looking at culture this morning and how it affects us. Say you're going to build a house like Pastor Rob did recently, okay? If we build a house, but in the process we find the cement foundation is crumbling, and we know enough what? We get a report. Don't want to build a house on a foundation that is crumbling. If the roof trusses have bad wood or they're cracks, or we get them redone. If the floors are warped before we put flooring down, we redo it. Don't our lives demand at least as much? Don't our lives beg for an answer to the mess they're in? And I think they do. One of the things I love to do more than anything else is talk to people. My wife and I started again. A regimen of walking every day, twice a day. It is only like two and two-thirds for the day. That's not much compared to the 9 miles that I walked for years before I had my stroke. But I can't believe what that's done for me. And better than getting more fit and losing a little weight already and all that, is I've met people. And I want to tell you, this is kind of a side, but people, I have people come up, Dave, you're looking good, you're walking fine. I don't know who this guy is. You know, I have people coming from my development, 140 homes, all the time saying, oh, how you feeling, how you doing? I don't even know who they are, but they knew who I am. And I think there is still a spirit of civility with most people and kindness of people. And it's just amazing that we were walking by a house that we've been observing. It just changed hands. It sold about 4 months ago. And the owner was out there, named Nate. And I bet we stopped and talked to him for an hour, maybe half an hour. They were felling trees in the back. That was in the morning. When we came by, his wife and him were working in the front yard. We stopped and talked for another half an hour. And he said, oh, why don't you come down here? We can have coffee. And told us that he has a 12-year-old girl, you know. Everybody has a story and they want to tell you, if we'll take the time to hear people's story. And if they perceive that the story is important and we are truly interested. We know that Jesus is the only real answer to all the problems in present-day culture. If you've ever driven down a country road or a mountain road, maybe a logging road, and you come to a fork, right? And you have to make a decision, pretty simple decision, you go left or right, you know? You got to go one of the two ways. But let me ask you, what do you do when the decision is this? That's the stack in Southern California. That's true, real. That is what we're facing in culture today. We faced in our culture 30 years ago a fork. We now face 10 or 20 or 30 choices. And I think the many paths have tended to dilute our possible choice of the right path. Society today says all paths are the same. Are they really? I want to close with a story from the third century that actually Rob has given before. This is just actually a summary of the story, so I won't take very long. I think it has a point. In the 4th century, a little monk named Telemachus from Asia was led by an inner voice to go to Rome without knowing why. He followed the crowds of the Colosseum. Two gladiators were fighting, and Telemachus tried to get between them to stop them, shouting three times, "In the name of Christ, forbear." Telemachus was killed by being run through with a sword by one of the gladiators. When the crowd saw the little monk lying dead in a pool of blood, they fell silent, leaving the stadium one by one. Because of Telemachus' death, 3 days later, the emperor by decree ended the games. I don't trust anybody what they say anymore. I'm sorry. I don't. I mean, if I know someone really well and respect their opinion, I believe it. I looked at the truth down below that little article. Corrections. He wasn't killed by a sword. It was worse than that. Rather, he was stoned to death by the crowd. Everyone didn't exit in one big rush. In fact, the gladiators didn't end for about 3 more centuries. But there was a starting point that began that whole movement of being disgusted by the horrible things that went on. Let me close with one short story. My wife and I have lived in Spokane for 19 years, and I think second or third year we were there on our water bill, a little pretty